KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in Oakland, California.
Visitation Valley.
Excelsior District.
Ingleside. Redwood City.
El Sobrante.
San Francisco.
Coming up, the strike is over at OUSD. We'll hear how the struggle to improve Oakland public schools will continue from here on.
The district says the 11% salary increase over 4 years, which was just approved in this new contract, that means more cuts are necessary in other areas.
Then a letter writing process that's helping people prepare for death and grieve after a loved one has passed.
There is nothing like hearing someone's voice that you love and being able to hear it at a time when you can no longer hear it.
A creative way to say goodbye today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. Today, Oakland teachers and students are back at school for the third day after a 7-day strike. The teachers ended up winning a much bigger pay increase than the district originally proposed. But over 40% of the union members voted not to take the deal. They said it didn't meet enough of their demands. Here with me to talk about what's next for OUSD and the labor movement are KALW education reporter Lee Romney and our economy reporter Liza Veal. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hello.
Hey, so 58% of teachers voted to approve this contract. Liza, you've been following strikes around the state and the country. Is that number low?
It is. For comparison, in LA, after their strike, 81% of teachers voted to take the deal. And then the Marriott strike, which was at the end of last year, over 99% of the members voted to ratify. Mm-hmm. So it's low.
Okay. So, Lee, what else did Oakland teachers want?
Well, they wanted to see bigger reductions to class size and lower caseloads for student support staff. Mm-hmm. They got some reductions, but even though OUSD nurses are getting a bonus, they still have the same maximum caseload, which is one nurse for every 1,350 students. Mm-hmm. So school closures are another sticking point. A lot of union members wanted a commitment that there won't be any school closures, and what they got was a 5-month moratorium. But the district's long-term plan for closures still stands.
And is that because of declining enrollment, so many kids going to charter schools?
Yeah. So school closures are a really key part of the district's plan to save money and reduce that high overhead. And the district says the 11% salary increase over 4 years, which was just approved in this new contract, that means more cuts are necessary in other areas.
Wow.
Yeah. So on Monday, the board voted 4-3, it was contentious, to approve nearly $22 million in cuts for next year. And we're talking really painful areas like school libraries, restorative justice, Asian Pacific Islander student support, and foster youth case managers. Mm. And at that meeting on Monday, students protested. And here's a clip of one student at the meeting, followed by Claremont Middle School teacher Janelle Fortaleza, who was interviewed by KPIX.
After we stood in solidarity with our hardworking teachers, you'll set up for less and turn your backs on us. Do not say you care about your students after you used us for your little raise.
I understand why they would feel betrayed. I just hope that they don't think that it's the teachers who betrayed them. I hate that the school board is using our salary increase as an excuse to cut these programs, because those are the kids that we care about the most, and those are the kids that we're always looking out for in our classrooms.
They sound heartbroken. Is there somewhere else the union was hoping the money would come from, if not budget cuts, though?
Well, I think the union still does not trust the district's budget projections. They've said so. They think the money is there. But the county's independent fiscal crisis management team that oversees the district released a FAT report last week saying that even without the cost of the raises calculated in, the district still faces a $9 million deficit this year alone and more to come.
Okay. So, Liza, where does that leave the teachers and the supporters of the strike?
Well, I talked to one teacher at Rise Elementary. His name's David Moore. And he's part of a group that's pushing for a wildcat strike. That means unauthorized by union leadership.
Uh-huh.
But I also talked to union members who didn't want to go on the record, who feel like most teachers aren't ready to strike again, at least not without a real reason to believe that they can do better a second time around.
Mm.
And that teacher, David Moore, he also said that his group is planning to run candidates to oppose the current union leadership in the next elections, because they blame those leaders for pushing an unpopular deal on the members.
And so in the meantime, some of the funding issues can't be solved by OUSD anyway.
That's very true. So that's why everyone, the district, teachers, the students are all saying they're going to go to Sacramento for help. Mm-hmm. So there are big structural problems that need to be fixed, but there are some efforts underway to fix them. Pending state legislation would curtail charter school growth. Controversial. Governor Newsom has talked about helping school districts with pension liabilities. Mm-hmm. And in 2020, voters are going to get a chance to undo part of Prop 13, the commercial part. That's California's infamous property tax cap.
Right. Okay. So does the strike then leave labor leaders emboldened?
Yeah. Well, organizers say the strike was significant because now teachers and also students and their parents are collectively organized. I mean, we've seen how that works. Like, for example, in West Virginia, where last year there were these extraordinary wildcat teacher strikes. Mm. And then just last month, the state legislature there, they were considering a state bill to allow charter schools. And then all the teachers, who are now really organized from pulling off that strike, they walked out to oppose it. And within hours, the legislature killed the bill.
Mm-hmm. So even with the strike over, they're still in a better position.
Yeah, to fight for whatever may come next. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I would just say that this strike in Oakland is part of a real wave. I mean, last year across the country, there were more major work stoppages, which includes strikes, than any other year in the last 3 decades.
All right. Thanks for the update, Liza.
Thanks, Anna.
And thank you, Lee.
Thank you.
Lee Romney's KALW's education reporter. Liza Veal is our economy reporter. Find more of their reporting at KALW.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Writing letters to loved ones before death isn't new, but Stanford Medicine has formalized that process to help people communicate. Through its Stanford Letter Project, people can move through topics like apology, forgiveness, and acknowledgement. KALW Audio Academy graduate Jeremy Ju has a story about that and a very personal reason for wanting to learn more about these legacy letters.
Recently, I found an old family video of my dad teaching me how to put ornaments on our Christmas tree.
Let's put the Santa up a little higher near this nice ornament here. Hook Santa on right over on this one here.
I'm wearing Superman pajamas, and it looks like I must be about 3 years old. I'm struggling a bit, but my dad is patient.
Oh, I'm a
friend. I'll give
it
him with it. All right, now, let's put one of these big old guys.
The video reminds me of how when I was in preschool, my dad used to draw pictures of my favorite superheroes and then leave them for me to color in when he dropped me off. In this way, he would refocus my attention and make me feel like he was nearby even after he was gone. That's something I don't have anymore. My dad died 5 years ago, and I've managed my grief by staying busy. I picked up more work and did things that before I had never even considered, like skydiving and running a marathon. I just wanted to feel something different than what I was feeling. I thought that as long as I kept moving, as long as I was productive, I could keep myself and my emotions in check. And for a while, that worked, until I realized I was just becoming numb. I knew I needed to do something different, but I didn't know what. So when I heard about Stanford's letter writing project, of course I wanted to learn more. The process helps participants acknowledge death in a way that I hadn't, and I wanted to know how or if that helped. The Stanford Letter Project provides a template with 7 life review tasks for people to think about and fill out. It's available in 8 different languages, in print, online, and as an app.
So we printed out the letter online.
Michael Richardson is a Stanford medical student who printed out the template for his 87-year-old grandmother and got his family talking. I spoke with Michael and his grandma, who he calls by the Chinese word pawpaw, on the day she gave him her letter. They were at her house in Los Angeles.
My name is Loretta M. Kong.
Yeah, and I'm Michael Richardson. And I received a legacy letter from my grandmother.
Yeah, I did it. I did. It was kind of tough to write it because some of the questions I never asked myself, and I have to you know, really think thoroughly how to answer. I try my best.
All right, life review task 3, asking for forgiveness. And you say, I'm very sorry that I can be impatient on some occasion. I would try hard to be more patient, and I want to ask for forgiveness. Well, I don't think you're impatient.
Sometimes I am. I think with your uncle and your mom, mm-hmm. I'm trying to be strict. Try to encourage them, study. So I can't get upset if they're not doing the way I like them to. And actually, that wasn't the best thing. I could have done better.
Mm-hmm. Were there any times when you were like in the hospital the last couple years where you had thought about having any sort of like end-of-life wishes or anything in writing?
No, I didn't think about writing. Uh-huh. I'm just a person really hard to express myself. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I did that. That's the way I'm. I wish I can improve a little bit.
Well, it doesn't have to end like now. Just because you wrote it doesn't mean that it's like set in stone. It's something we can still talk about. And
oh, sure.
If you ever want to like add things or think about it.
That would be a good idea. Yeah. That's a very good suggestion.
Yeah. Love you, Papa.
Love you too. Love you too. I love you all so much.
Sometimes I go searching for that kind of exchange with my dad. I'll scroll through old texts, search emails, watch old family videos, or listen to saved voicemails.
Hey, JC, left me a message that you need the number for the car guy. What's up with the van? I was just wondering if there's something I could help with.
It really doesn't need to be much. A quick check-in is sometimes all I can handle. Because while it's nice to see him in those videos, read his words, or hear his voice, it's also a reminder that he's no longer here. And that emptiness, that grief, can be overwhelming at times.
Thanks, Jay. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Okay. Take care. Love you. Bye.
It's hard not to wonder, if my father and I had written letters like Michael and his grandma, would we have gotten to know each other better? I know it would have been difficult for me to introduce, and a little awkward, but I like to think it would have been worth it. It was for Matthew Schoen. He's another Stanford medical student, and he did research on the letter project.
I was talking to patients, and the things they tell you, the things they share just are incredible. And I realized, like, these are conversations I should be having with my own family.
Matt's just 27, but he wrote his own letter to his brothers and parents.
What I tried to do is I tried to imagine myself, like, sitting in a hospital bed or sitting at home and knowing that I had, like, 2 minutes and what I'd tell them.
I met up with Matt and his mom, Lynn, to hear Matt's letter and how it impacted their family.
To Mark and Connor, my brothers. Mark, I am very proud of you for finding out who you are, feeling confident in being that person and in the process making those around you better people.
I've always wanted my children to be close and stick together and realize the value of one another. So kind of hearing all that, I just kind of felt full of love and gratitude at the moment. Just wanted to hold him and, just keep him with me and keep him safe.
To Mom and Dad, thank you for always allowing your kids to grow and develop into whoever they want to be. You only encouraged, never pushed, and you always had our back.
Thank you also for making such an incredible home. Home is special to me. That place is magical. I want to thank you very much for everything you have done for me. It became clear to me that I knew that he felt loved all his life, which is something hugely important to me, and was kind of a reminder to everybody about how important it is that we let each other know that.
This past year, I lost two of my grandparents. They were getting sick around the time that I wrote this letter, and I think in the past we would have kind of just tried to stay positive and optimistic and almost ignored what was coming. But having shared the letter, having the conversation of end of life and legacy and what matters to you being like in the forefront, we were able to talk about what Grammy or Grandma may have wanted towards the end, or how we could help them, or share stories about their memories and what mattered to them. And I think that's a big thing for it. It's like this letter makes death, or the conversation about death, less intimidating.
When my dad was sick, my sister Sierra and I took care of him, but we never talked about him dying. Even now, saying it feels uncomfortable. Instead, we focused on his appointments and his physical comfort, never really checking in on our feelings or acknowledging the situation for what it was. Deep down, I think we knew he was going to die, but we couldn't process it because processing meant that we were accepting it, and we weren't ready for that. Still now, I feel guilty for all the times that I could have spent with my dad, but chose to do something else instead. I wish that I'd shown my appreciation for all the times he put me first. Like when our family would visit our cabin in Washington State, he'd drive all night so that the rest of us could sleep. When he first found out about his cancer, he called me to check in to see how I was doing. But he didn't mention that he was in the hospital and that they were running tests to find out what was wrong. At the time, I was angry that he wasn't open, but now I see it was his way of protecting me. Also, I know it was hard for him to express himself, the same way it is for me. I get wrapped up in my thoughts and stumble over my words. A lot of times I feel overwhelmed and don't know where to start.
Ah, you must be Frisch.
I am.
Frisch.
Hi, Jeremy. Nice pleasure. To meet you.
Luckily, there are volunteers like Frisch Brandt who offer their time to help others find the words they're looking for.
The conversation is always there in terms of our mortality, but we aren't always listening to it. My name's Frisch Brandt, and I am a letter midwife. I help people write all kinds of letters. When we're in conversation, we hear some things, we don't hear others. A letter is something that we can go back to, like a book, time and time again, and meet it with who we are at that moment.
Hi, I'm Kelsey Crow, and I'm working with Frisch Brandt.
Kelsey is an author, speaker, and cancer survivor who wanted to write her legacy letter while she's still in good health.
She's helping me identify important bits of my heart and thinking that I can pass on to people who love me, bits that I may not have recognized as being so valuable, but they are.
So tell me what you are thinking.
It's hard for parents to talk about dying when they're well. On the one hand, well, you know.
Yeah.
And at the same time, it's a real missed opportunity when you wait until you're truly sick.
When you're working on your letter alone and you're, you know, you can get distracted, you're looking at how the words go together. But when there's somebody else and you're in dialogue, it takes a different cadence.
Who in your life has played a very important role? This is just an unearthing process.
My husband, yeah. Mike, he's very kind. He's very empathetic. Looks at other people's point of view. See? Each year I find him more attractive as he grays and stuff. I love it.
What do you want him to know?
I want him to know that he can do this and that I have such faith.
The letter doesn't come out whole on the half shell. It comes out in pieces and then we repuzzle it together like clay.
Okay, so this is how it goes. I'll read this, knowing that it's a work in progress. The first time you hear it, it's one thing, and the second time it's something else. Feel free to flesh out any parts. Mike, we are such an integral part of each other's lives. I've learned so much from you. I want you to believe in yourself like I do.
You've done so much to help me actualize my potential. I want that for you, however it comes. I wanted to do this when I was clear-eyed and hopeful. And just imagining the future without me feels more positive for having done this.
I've learned that everybody has a letter in them. I've learned that there's great solace and maybe joy in putting that to writing, putting it to paper. And there is nothing like hearing someone's voice that you love and being able to hear it at a time when you can no longer hear it.
When I hear Frisch say that, I think, that's it. I started this radio story because I wanted that kind of letter. I wanted to hear my dad's voice again. I asked my sister Sierra to come over and help me go through some of his things.
Do you want to look at paper stuff? Do you want to look at, what do you want to look at?
Well, can we listen to some of the recordings you found first?
We looked at pictures, watched old family videos, and talked about our dad.
He was like a problem solver. Like, he wanted to hear about our problems, not like our emotional problems, but like our like car problems, our like cell phone problems, and like fix them.
And I talked about my regrets.
I want to understand him more. Does that make sense? It's not that he's a mystery to me so much, but I want to know him better, and I can't.
Yes, totally. But I don't think us not knowing him better is on us.
I asked her if she believed, like me, that a letter from one of us could have helped start a conversation. What she told me caught me completely off guard.
I wrote Dad a letter.
When he was sick?
Yeah, and he didn't... He never talked to me about the letter.
The whole time, I had imagined that if only I had written a letter, we would have had this great conversation. But of course, it wouldn't have been like that. My sister had tried, and my dad didn't respond. The thing is, Sierra didn't have the same expectations as me.
I thought that he would acknowledge it and let me know that he got it and he read it, but I didn't expect him to write me back. So I think that it was good for me because I know that he heard things that I never actually verbally said, and I know that he knows or knew, but it didn't start a conversation. So you could have written one and he would have read it, but I don't think that he would have responded.
My sister found peace in the act of writing. I think that learning about legacy letters, meeting Michael and his grandma, Matt and Lynn, Frisch and Kelsey, all of that has helped me start processing my grief. Just talking about my dad, unpacking his things and my feelings has been good. And I guess, in a way, this radio story is my legacy letter to my dad. Because one of the things I've learned is that finding that peace, it's not really about receiving a legacy letter or writing one in the hopes of getting a certain kind of response. It's about making sure you say the things you want to. I'm Jeremy Jew for Cross Currents.
That was Lasting Letters, Leaving a Legacy Behind, an original documentary produced by KELW reporter Jeremy Jew, edited by Lisa Morehouse. It originally aired in 2017 and was honored with the Best Feature Award by the San Francisco Press Club last year. You can learn more about the Stanford Letter Project or Frisch Brandt's letter writing service at our website, KELW.org. And did you know Cross Currents is also a podcast? You can listen on your phone to any story anytime. It's like magic. Just subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. So we got a tip on this local music event from Dori Stein, host of KELW's Tangents, which airs on Saturdays. This is Kitka, a woman's vocal ensemble from Oakland. They'll be singing at the First Congregational Church of Oakland this Sunday evening. The Cross Currents team includes Janae Darden, Magnolia McKay, Kevin McLean, Lisa Morehouse, Marissa Ortega-Welch, Drew Gwynn, and Eli Wertschafter. Our engineers are James Rollins, Tariq Foda, and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Shirin Adil. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.
Полуночти, падай до ясности, нашти полуночти.